Good morning. It's time for In the Green Outdoors with Gail Martin and Carol Kelly. Each week, the ladies will bring you gardening and planting ideas, tell you about native Ohio plants, prairies and habitats, and great tips for everything in the green outdoors. This week with Carol Kelly.
Hello, everyone. Well, before jumping into this week's topic, I'd like to add one additional bit of information relative to my last program. I had pointed out that ginkgo trees contain some of the toxic chemical urushiol, most commonly known to be found in poison ivy, and that causes an allergic reaction in the form of severe dermatitis in most people when exposed to it. The toxin also is found in poison oak and poison sumac, and to a lesser extent in cashews and pistachios, all of which are members of the Anacardiaceae family of plants. Since then, I've been reading the excellent book Dispersals by Jessica J. Lee and found out that the tropical fruit mango also contains some urushiol. The author mentioned that she's someone who has a mild allergy to this fruit and that if she ingests the skin or juice, she ends up with hives and itching skin for days afterward. Well, being curious, I did a bit more research and found that there's at least one additional member of this plant family that contains urushiol, the ornamental shrub or small tree occasionally seen in landscapes, Cotinus, more commonly known as smoke tree or smoke bush. Its common name is descriptive of the large panicles of wispy, cream-colored flowers that the plant produces in spring and early summer, and that gives the effect of a cloud of smoke surrounding the bush. Some species are native to Eurasia, but there's also a species native to the southeastern U.S. Smoke trees are considered deer-resistant, since it seems that they don't taste good to them or other animals. But if for some reason a human would try to consume any parts of the smoke tree, they likely would experience nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea. For especially sensitive individuals, simply coming in contact with the tree's sap may cause an allergic reaction similar to what one would expect with poison ivy. So if you do happen to have one of these shrubs, wear protective gear when pruning these bushes. Moving on now to my main topic for this week, a discussion of just a few of our traditional Thanksgiving foods with a focus on those that are native to the Americas. You may be surprised to learn that some foods that have become staples of our feast are relatively new to the menu and were not part of the first Thanksgiving described in history books. Although white potatoes, as well as red, purple, yellow, and all shades in between, are native to the South American continent, for some reason this vegetable did not expand its range the way that corn, usually called maize by Europeans, did. Potatoes didn't arrive in North America until the 18th century, introduced the long way round by way of European immigrants. So, alas, no mashed potatoes and gravy. It just doesn't seem right. Well, what about yams? Well, the things that we see for sale 99% of the time in our grocery stores, including the canned ones on the shelves, are not actually yams. From a botanical standpoint, the label is incorrect. These actually are sweet potatoes, members of the genus Ipomea, the morning glory family, believe it or not, whereas yams actually are closely related to lilies and grasses. There are over 600 varieties of yams, all native to Africa and Asia, and 95% of these still are grown in Africa. Yams are starchier and drier than sweet potatoes, but commonly are similar in size to the sweet potatoes we see in the store. Sweet potatoes were first cultivated in Peru, perhaps as long ago as 2500 BCE. In the late 15th century, Columbus took the vegetable home with him, and now these are grown around the world. But the point is moot in any case, since it is unlikely that sweet potatoes were on the menu, and certainly yams were not. But many years down the road, when Europeans did encounter sweet potatoes and found these orangey tubers sweeter than the others, to differentiate between them, they rather unimaginatively dubbed them sweet potatoes. Many more years passed before sweet potatoes came to be called yams. That confusion came about when African slaves encountered the sweet potatoes here in America. Since these New World tubers resembled the yams that they were familiar with in Africa, that was the name that they were given. The misnomer stuck, and to this day, the USDA still officially uses the word yams when labeling sweet potatoes. Drives us botanical folks crazy. While the sweet potatoes we see in the stores originated in the area that is now Ecuador, our North American continent also has a native wild sweet potato from the same genus, Ipomea ponderata, also known as man of the earth, man root, or bigfoot, morning glory. That last common name reveals that not only do wild and cultivated sweet potatoes share the same genus, it also includes the pretty garden flower, the morning glory, whose showy flowers attract hummingbirds and a wide variety of butterflies. William Bartram, the famous early botanist, noted that American natives used the wild root medicinally for kidney problems. A distant cousin, so to speak, with white morning glory type flowers, is field bindweed, a creeping, deep-rooted perennial weed native to Europe and Western Asia. That likely arrived in the United States around the mid-18th century, when it was utilized both as an ornamental and medicinal herb. Since then, it has become an invasive pest of farm fields throughout the U.S. and Canada. And while I'm on the subject of sweet potatoes, how many people realize that the young leaves and stems of our garden sweet potatoes are edible? Some gardeners listening today may be accustomed to starting their own sweet potato slips in late winter for planting out in late spring, as my grandmother taught me to do. Anyone who has the garden space to grow this excellent vegetable really should do so. While sprawling sweet potato vines take up as much room as squash vines, unlike the squash plants, sweet potatoes are not plagued by cucumber beetles, squash bugs, or any other pest that I have ever seen. And the vines offer another bonus. Many side shoots appear all along the vines, and it's these shoots that may be eaten in various ways, just as you would any other green. Even if you don't plan to grow sweet potatoes in your garden next spring, you could add some fresh greens to your winter diet now by starting a sweet potato. Just submerge about one-third of the tuber in a container of water, and remember to change the water every few days, or it gets scummy. Of course, this is the same method you'd use to obtain slips for planting in the garden in the spring. Once the shoots reach 6 inches long or so, you can start clipping them back halfway and using them raw in stir-fry or soups and so on. I currently have a plant growing in my southeast-facing Sunny Bay window, and the vines are long enough now to snip a few to eat any time. And additional shoots will continue to appear all winter. I've also added a small trellis for the vines to grow on, and it's a very attractive houseplant. An important note, however, is that you find organically grown tubers if you wish to do this. Others in the produce section may well have been treated with a chemical that inhibits sprouting for a longer shelf life. Moving on from root vegetables to a couple of not-so-common tree fruits, persimmons and pawpaws are two fruits native to North America that were enjoyed by America's indigenous peoples. Samples of these, the fruits as well as young trees, were taken back to Europe by many intrepid botanists and agriculturists that traveled back and forth across the Atlantic. Persimmons are related to the ebony tree, both trees well known for their hard wood. In fact, persimmon wood has been used to make the heads for golf clubs. The persimmons sold in grocery stores are an Asian species, not our native ones. These cultivated Asian fruits are larger and less perishable than our North American natives. However, the commercial varieties, often called kaki or fuyu persimmons, are only hardy to about USDA growing zone 7, so they thrive only in the commercial orchards of Texas and California. Luckily for us wild food foragers, however, our native persimmons thrive in our Ohio climate, although they are far too perishable to be marketable, except here and there in local farmers' markets in the fall. But they surely would have been present at the very first Thanksgiving. Pawpaws are even lesser known than persimmons, but like persimmons, the fruit is highly perishable and also never found in grocery store produce sections. There are relatively few commercial growers of this unique native fruit, although over the last few years or so, interest in developing numerous varieties of pawpaws has increased rapidly. The flavor often is described as tropical, a blend of banana and mango, but with the development of a number of cultivars spearheaded by the work being undertaken at the University of Kentucky, the range of flavors is expanding. To conclude today's segment, I thought it would be appropriate to include a few Thanksgiving-related historical anecdotes that I omitted from my recent presidential series of In the Green Outdoors. In September and October, I discussed plants and animals that have been associated with our American presidents over our history. In one segment, I related that in 1863, 10-year-old Tad Lincoln begged his father to spare a turkey that had been sent to the White House intended for a holiday feast, and Lincoln allowed the boy to keep the turkey as a pet instead of ending up as their dinner. As I pointed out then, however, Lincoln's pardoning of Tad's turkey was not the start of the now annual tradition, and I promised to talk about that at a later segment. So here, as a very famous radio personality has said before me, is the rest of the story. In a speech on October 3rd, 1789, George Washington proclaimed a national day of Thanksgiving for November 26 that year, but subsequent declarations were left up to the governors of the various states. By the 1840s, a Thanksgiving holiday was celebrated widely across the Northeast and Midwest and was described as a good old New England custom by a New Orleans newspaper, the Daily Picayune. In 1863, President Lincoln proclaimed Thanksgiving as a national holiday, officially setting the date as the last Thursday in November. Because of the Civil War, however, the Confederate States of America refused to recognize Lincoln's authority, so Thanksgiving was not celebrated nationally until years later. In the minds of Southerners, Thanksgiving was a Yankee holiday, partially because the story originated in 1621 in Plymouth, Massachusetts, a northern state, and also likely due to the popularity of the custom up north. But even more, the South saw Thanksgiving as a challenge to the institution of slavery. In 1947, President Harry Truman confirmed the fourth Thursday of November as Thanksgiving Day. That year, he received a live turkey from the National Turkey Federation in what now has become an annual White House Thanksgiving tradition. In 1963, John F. Kennedy did not officially spare a bird in a pre-Thanksgiving ceremony in the Rose Garden. Kennedy simply announced that he would not eat the bird given to him by the California Turkey Advisory Board, but newspapers reported that the president had pardoned the gobbler. Kennedy sadly was assassinated just days before Thanksgiving that year. Ronald Reagan was the first president actually to use the word pardon in connection with a Thanksgiving turkey. In 1987, in response to media queries about whether he might pardon Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North or any of the other figures involved in the Iran-Contra scandal, Reagan joked that if the year's turkey had not already been destined for a petting farm, quote, "I would have pardoned him." However, it was President George H.W. Bush who is credited with beginning the tradition in 1989. Presented with a live turkey to be used for the presidential family dinner, Bush said, "Let me assure you and this fine Tom Turkey that he will not end up on anyone's dinner table, not this guy. He's granted a presidential pardon as of right now and will live out his days on a farm not far from here." Bush then pardoned a turkey each remaining year of his presidency, as has every president since. Well, I hope you've enjoyed this sojourn into the history of Thanksgiving. Until next time, this is Carol Kelly, wishing listeners a very happy and bountiful holiday, and reminding you to be especially thankful for all the native food plants that we have, some of which you might just plan to grow next year in your garden in the green outdoors.
And there's your show for the week. In the Green Outdoors is a production of WZMO Radio. The show airs Saturdays and Mondays right after the second cup at about 9:30 a.m. If you have a question or comment for Carol or Gail, you can email it to WZMO@roadrunner.com. Thank you for listening.